Well, let's take our Bibles and go to the book of Isaiah. The book of Isaiah, our reading this week, this past week, Isaiah chapter 16 through 20. You know, I found that reading to be pretty hard. It's interesting to me. There's some people that have certain things they read and you think, man, I really got that. I really enjoyed that. And I'm going like, man, I didn't. I had to really work at that. And then sometimes it's the other way around. And there's some chapters in Isaiah that are just so rich and so powerful and just step out there in such a way that it doesn't seem to be that hard to understand. And in part, some of the prophecies are that way to me. Well, of course, it's because we have the other side of the prophecy. You know, we've seen prophecy that has already happened, that's taking place. And so that helps us to understand when we read the prophecy as it was given. Well, in our reading this week, and really part of our reading last week, chapters 13 through 23, really, are some prophecies about the future of 10 different nations, including Judah. And, well, to me, I'll just tell you, I mean, some of that was hard to get a handle on. I don't understand every point that was being made. Now, I will tell you that I think those that it was being written to could understand. I mean, there are places that are mentioned that, well, I don't know where those are exactly. And there was some meaning attached to the place that was being spoken about. Well, I'm not getting that. I mean, I think we could get that. We'd have to look at that deeper. We'd have to really spend some time understanding the significance of the place that's being mentioned. And when we're just doing a read-through, as we've been doing, well, we probably don't get that part. And so that makes it a little more difficult. And so last week and this week, what I've tried to focus on in some of the reading is sort of the highlights and what is the overall theme of what's being said. And I think we can get that. I think we can understand, you know, that part of it right there. And so actually, I want to back up to chapter 13 a little bit from last week's reading. And we're not going to go through all of these chapters. We're not going through chapter 23. But I think chapter 10 through 23, these are chapters that all kind of run together. You know, and there are these prophecies against these nations. And there is a common theme to those. And again, we're not going to go through all of those. But it begins by saying, each of them do, an oracle, in this case, chapter 13, verse 1, an oracle concerning Babylon that Isaiah, son of Amoz, saw. An oracle. What we're talking about here is the verdict of God. There's a judgment that's being made. And that's what's being said against each of these nations. And so we start off by understanding here that what's being said, what Isaiah is delivering here is the judgment of God. And some of it is not so pleasant. These are truly judgments that are coming from him. And as this one begins here in chapter, we're not going to be reading all these chapters, we're just picking out certain verses. You know, verse 2, raise a banner on a bare hilltop and shout to them and beckon to them to enter the gates of the nobles. I have commanded my holy ones. I have summoned my warriors to carry out my wrath, those who rejoice in my triumph. Okay, we're talking about some judgment here. That's going to be taking place. There's more in chapter 21 about Babylon as well. And in some, it can be helpful to look at chapter 21 and chapter 13 together in that way. But here's what the Lord is saying to these. You know, I have commanded my holy ones. I have summoned my warriors to carry out my wrath. God is commanding something. And so at the very, very beginning of this, in a bigger picture of something here that I'd like to suggest is a theme through these chapters, is the fact that the power of Jehovah God is overwhelming and that He is in control of some events that are unfolding, some events that are going to take place. And in these chapters, that's something we have to see. You know, that God is ultimately in control. We'll read a little bit farther, verse 4. Listen, a noise on the mountains like that of a great multitude. Listen, an uproar among the kingdoms like nations massing together. The Lord Almighty is mustering an army of war. No doubt who is in command now? Jehovah. And this is to what nation? That mighty nation of Babylon. When Babylon came to power in a rather quick way, they amassed a tremendous amount of influence and power in sort of a short time. And there are those who would have thought, when that nation came, this is the nation of nations. This is the nation that cannot be overtaken by anyone else. Well, that would be foolish for any nation to think, wouldn't it? But some viewed Babylon that way. And yet what God is saying through Isaiah is that Jehovah God is in control. And no matter how great a nation Babylon may be, when the Lord amasses, you know, His army for war, there is no question, there is no doubt who will be victorious. And so that's something that in the text, something that I can see. When this was written, and again, the timing of some of these prophecies, I don't know for sure. I mean, in fact, I'm not sure any of us can know, with maybe the exception of a couple where there is a king that's mentioned. Well, that would narrow down the time of when the prophecy would be. We can kind of pin that one down. But we have to kind of look at some things in some general view. There is going to be some prophecies against nations that didn't necessarily reign in great power at the same time. And yet there's prophecies against them. So maybe some of these prophecies came at slightly different times as far as their delivery goes. I want to read verse 9 here again. See, the day of the Lord is coming, a cruel day with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land desolate, to destroy the sinners within it. The stars of heaven and their constellations will not show their light. The sun, rising sun, will be darkened. The moon will not give its light. I will punish the world for its evil, the wicked for their sins. I will put an end to the arrogance of the haughty and will humble the pride of the ruthless. There were some kings through the ages that were powerful and wielded a lot of authority. But there is no king of any mighty nation that could say this, who could dim the stars of heaven, that had that kind of control, who could darken the sun. It exemplifies for us the power of God. And when He makes judgment, when these oracles come from God, they mean something. And it's like Isaiah is saying to these nations as we go through, he's saying, you better listen. I mean, as this starts out in this prophecy here, it very much helps us to see and to be reminded of the power of God. And that ultimately He is in control. He was the maker of these things. He will be the closer of them too. And these nations and these kings needed to see that. Well, and we need to see that. And I suppose that's why these prophecies are still here, so that we can be reminded of these things. And of course, we know the end of the story of these prophecies. Secular history even would tell us the end of these stories. These nations that came and rose to prominence and power, and yet were destroyed and made of nothing, as the prophecies of God had predicted would come. And so there's God's judgment on Babylon, and we're not going to spend this much time on every chapter, but this is the kind of the introductory prophecy to these nations. And there's a lot said about Babylon because of its size and its power and the timing of when these prophecies came, I presume, is part of that too. Like I said, chapter 13 and chapter 21 talk about Babylon. Still here in chapter 13, just a little bit of insight on God's judgment on Babylon. Verse 17. See, I will stir up against them the Medes, who do not care for silver and have no delight in gold. Their bows will strike down the young men. They will have no mercy on infants, nor will they look with compassion on children. Babylon, the jewel of kingdoms, The glory of the Babylonians' pride will be overthrown by God like Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, wait a minute. I thought this said there would be war from the Medes, that was going to be the problem. That was going to be the insertion. But then it says they'll be overthrown by God. Well, it just tells us again something about who's in control. Babylon, that great country, in fact, was going to be destroyed and taken down. There was going to be a country that would, for a time at least, be even larger and greater and more powerful than Babylon. Who thought that could happen? Well, God did. Because God was the one that brought the Medes and the Persians against the Babylonians. And we're reminded once again, it was the Babylonians' pride that brought them down. That's what God said. You know, the jewel of kingdoms. Remember we said, like the kingdom of kingdoms, this magnificently strong kingdom, you know, will be overthrown by God. God is in control. Sometimes I think I struggle to fully grasp the concept of that. You know, that God has us in a position where we make choices in life, we make decisions in life. As nations, there are choices that are made. I'm not necessarily suggesting that God makes the choices for nations. I think He uses the choices that nations make for His cause. He will use it for His cause. What if the Babylonians hadn't been filled with so much pride? What if they had turned to the Lord? Would He have destroyed them? Well, that wouldn't be the pattern we see in Scripture now, would it? You know, but here it was their pride that brought them down, that God used another nation to come and destroy them. You see, some of the overall points that I hope that we pull from some of these chapters is that the power of Jehovah God is overwhelming. And God's power comes upon the will of man not by surprise. Well, I guess it surprises some if man has ignored what God said. But it's not because God has not delivered His will and has said, here's what happens if you follow me. Here's what happens if you reject me. God has always given man that choice. And we can see that even in these prophecies and what comes from that. God's judgments are so often foretold. They are warned. And most of the time ignored. And that's what we see, even in these prophecies. The power of Jehovah God is overwhelming. God is in control. That's one of the points that we see as we go through the prophecies. You know, that's just a powerful point in these passages. And then ultimately, God's will controls. And we may not see it all of the time or fully understand His purpose, His will. But we don't have to. We don't always have to understand why God says some things that He says. We don't always have to understand that. I struggle with that. I want to know why. Why do we have to do this? God does not always explain why. He doesn't have to. He is God. But He tells us what He wants and expects from us. And He expects us to obey. We see that in the overall text. Let's look on at another chapter or two and just see some points like this. I think we see some of the same points, really, that it will be made over and again. In chapter 14, and again, I've kind of backed up to some chapters that weren't even in our reading this last week. But like I said, chapters 13 through 23, all kind of run together, are of the same purpose, are prophecies. And so I just kind of went back to the beginning of that. In chapter 14, there is sort of here some continuation of the fall of Babylon, but maybe some other points that made. You know, within this, in the first part of chapter 14, we are introduced again to the idea of the children of Israel, a return to God. There was a remnant that returned after the fall of Babylon. There are blessings here promised to God's covenant people that, you know, Israel will be restored when Babylon falls. Chapter 14, the Lord will have compassion on Jacob. Once again, he will choose Israel and will settle them in their own land. Aliens will join them and unite with the house of Jacob. Nations will take them and bring them to their own place. And the house of Israel will possess the nations as men servants and maid servants in the Lord's land. And they will make captives of their captors and rule over them. On the day the Lord gives you relief from suffering and turmoil and cruel bondage, you will take up this taunt against the king of Babylon as it goes on. And I just think part of the point that kind of stands out that we can see in this text here is to be reminded that Israel was delivered into the hands of Babylon because of their sins, that that's how they wound up in captivity, and that God had promised that a remnant would return. And it seems like that's part of what this prophecy is addressing here. It's a reminder of that point. Because there's been this discussion of this fall of Babylon. And then with that, there's the reminder here that the Lord will have compassion on Jacob. The Lord will have compassion on Israel with regard to that return. Let's look at a couple of these other prophecies here in the latter part of chapter 14. A prophecy against Assyria. Well, now, who would have thought it? The fall of Assyria is what would allow the rise of Babylon, that great country. Well, we've already talked about that. These aren't necessarily, I think, in a timing order here. And there was that time when there were those who thought, well, what nation could be greater than Assyria? Now, they were a nation that kind of went on for a longer period of time and rose to some great power. And who would have thought that they could fall? But maybe this text here helps us to be reminded again that God rules in the kingdoms of men. There in chapter 14, verse 24. The Lord Almighty has sworn, surely as I have planned, so it will be, and as I have purposed, so it will stand. I will crush the Assyrian in my land and my mountains, and I will trample him down. His yoke will be taken from my people and his burden removed from their shoulders. Did we pick up on the fact here that God is reminding these, I will crush the Assyrian in my land. It belongs to me. You know, they may have been very mighty and powerful, but the Lord is saying, no, that land belongs to me. And on my mountains, he's the one that made the land. He's the one that made the mountains. I will trample him down. Again, it's just one of these pictures of the power of God, and again, that he is in control. And verses 26 and 27, still, I think the same point. Who is in control? This is the plan determined for the whole world. This is the hand stretched out over all nations. For the Lord Almighty has purposed, and who can thwart him? His hand is stretched out. Who can turn it back? When the Lord says, here's the judgment that's going to come, no one, no army, no collection of armies is going to be able to stand up and say, no, you're not going to do that. Who could do that? It's all the Lord's. It belongs to Him. And those great nations that have come and who have invaded other lands, like that of Israel, you know, no, you can't come here. You can never take us down. Who could say that? There is no nation, no matter how great, no matter how powerful, there's no king who could say to the Lord, perhaps some tried, that you cannot destroy us. And again, this is one of the points that just, as I was reading through this, it just kept going through my mind. And as I listened through some of this, sometimes I hear different things when I listen than when I read it. And the other way around is true as well. And I just kept thinking, God is in control. I mean, that's what he's saying. I am in control of these things. And that just seemed to me to be just such a standout point. In the next few verses, a prophecy against the Philistines. Well, the Philistines have been around for a long time, haven't they? When we're reading through the Old Testament text, it just seems like they've always been there. I mean, from some of the earliest times, here were the Philistines, and there were these battles between the people of God and the Philistines. Never could just get rid of them. You know, when God sent the children of Israel into the land of the promised land, and they were to destroy all nations, you know, they ran the Philistines to the coast, but they never destroyed them. They never got rid of them. But here's the judgment that came in the year of King Ahaz. Well, in this case, we kind of know when this prophecy came, because Ahaz was king around 715 B.C. So this prophecy, we can sort of pin that down. Verse 29, "Do not rejoice, all you Philistines, that the rod that you struck is broken. From the root that of that snake will spring up a viper. Its fruit will be darting venomous serpent. The poorest of the poor will find pasture, and the needy will lie down in safety. But your root I will destroy by famine. It will slay your survivors." Here's the judgment of God. Whoever it was that struck the Philistines, whoever it was that God would send upon them to strike them down, the Philistines had lost their power. They had no reason to rejoice. God will cause a greater power to come and destroy them. And we see that with all these prophecies. All nations will be destroyed. God will raise up a greater power to come after them. But it's in this same text that I think there's an offering of hope. And I think it's not just for the Philistines, but it's for all of the nations. And in fact, in some of the other prophecies, and Rick made some points about this morning, we see an offer of hope. Well, that would only be consistent with the nature of God. That there's always choices we have to make. We can serve Him or we cannot. And if we choose to serve Him, there's reasons for hope, always. All the way through the Bible text, we see that over and over. There's reasons to follow Him. There's reasons for hope. Verse 32, "What answer shall be given to the envoys of that nation? The Lord has established Zion, and in her His afflicted people will find refuge." Who will turn to Him? Spiritual Zion, where we can all find safety and refuge. In the book of Isaiah, in some other passages a little more easily seen and understood to me, at least, is that very hope. You know, that God will take and God will deliver those who will choose to be His people. And that's a reoccurring theme. It's throughout the Bible, yes. I certainly see that in the prophecies that's given through Isaiah. And so as we go through some of these chapters, I heard a couple of others say, it's like, this is kind of hard reading. And I'm kind of going like, yes, I'm not the only one. Yes, this has been hard reading for me, and I do not understand every point, but I think I understand the themes of what God is speaking about. And that's what I hope that we will understand. God is going to make judgment against those who are not willing to be His people, but He will deliver those who are. And that's always been the theme we find with the Lord. Just some things for us to think about as we continue our readings this week. I hope you're doing that. I hope you're reading. It's a chapter a day. We can do this and continue our readings as we go on this week. The Lord will deliver us. And if we need deliverance, if we need to be pulled from sin, if we're willing to turn from evil, if we are willing to turn from sin, God is there and He's willing to help us. He's willing to take our hand and to lift us up. But we'll have to choose Him. And if you need some help in some way in response to the gospel of Christ, we hope you'll come tonight as we stand and sing.